Hello, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. Today we're going to be talking about the modern entertainment industry, its effect on our culture, and what we can do to reverse what I see as a descent into violence, vulgarity, and perversity. And I'd like to start us off today with a couple of scriptures. First is Philippians 4:8. Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. And the next one is Romans 12:2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Dean, do you think those scriptures speak to the whole issue of entertainment? And if so, what is the message? Do you like how I just set you up with that?
We could spend the next
question.
30 minutes on
yep.
this.
I want to know your thoughts on
yeah.
this.
Yeah. Well, Rita, those are two great verses that have challenged me for much of my Christian life. And let me start, first of all, with the text from Romans chapter 12, because that insists that as Christians, we don't just accept whatever Hollywood chooses to pass off as entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
He expects more of us than following the shifting winds of the world. And I'd like to give an example. One of the things that happened in my life that bears that out, I recall a movie some of our listeners will still remember called Back to the Future.
I remember it.
Well, that was, 30 years ago. It was very popular, and people in our church, we were attending a church in Reston at the time, people in our church just insisted that our pastor go see that movie. He did. Guess what he preached about the next Sunday?
Oh, no.
Back to the Future. And it was a good reminder for both Janet and me for what we should be watching for, because he pointed out things in that movie that just went over our heads. Suggestions of immoral sexual conduct, for example. We had normalized it. So that was a lesson to us, and we've been much more careful about what we see and what to look for. But then that takes us to the second verse that you mentioned, and that's the verse from Philippians. It's actually the first one that you mentioned, Philippians chapter 4. I love this passage because it brings back good memories of how Janet put that verse on top of our television set when our children were growing up. And it was a reminder to us also that even when the children weren't around, we needed to have a filter on the things that we were watching on television or at the movie theater. And so those are just two great passages. I'd like to suggest one more.
Let's hear it.
It's another one I like because it reinforces this same passage. It's from Psalm chapter 101, and it says, I will put no wicked thing before my eyes, and I hate the work of those who place it there, and I will have no part of it. I hate the wicked things that are put before my eyes. I hope that we are repulsed by those images. We'll get to it later about pornography. I just want to vomit every time I see that put before innocent children or adults who should know better.
We need both sides. We need to hate what is evil,
yes.
and we also need to love what is good.
Yes.
And I think that's so important for us to have in our minds that it's not only about just totally rejecting every form of art and entertainment. It's about seeking out what is good, what is encouraging, what is hopeful and inspiring and beautiful. So
true that's and honorable
yes,
and pure and
exactly.
lovely.
Exactly.
Right.
So I love that yes. verse because it's a reminder
yes.
for us to run to what is good.
Yes.
I am just continuously astounded by the increasingly violent, sexually explicit, vulgar, profane, anti-family content that I see appearing on TV, in movies, music, video games, not to mention the internet. That's a whole separate category. I don't think most of us take it seriously enough. You know, you mentioned Back to the Future. By today's standards, that would be considered absolutely mild. Kindergarten stuff.
Family friendly.
But Dean, this has been just such an issue for decades now of it just getting worse and worse and worse. So maybe our listeners are wondering, why are we talking about this issue at this particular time? Well, here's why I think we need to talk about it now. In recent months, the media has been flooded with just outrage over the mass shootings, especially in schools, and over the prevalence of sexual harassment in the workplace. And we should be outraged by all of that. And it's fine to talk about the public policy implications of these occurrences, these trends. But if we aren't talking about some of the root causes of these trends in our culture, then we are talking about putting Band-Aids on cancers, essentially. It's time we talk about this more.
It is far past time, and we can go back to the history, to when the Supreme Court took the prayer and Bible out of public schools, when they took down the Ten Commandments from public school walls. The root of that problem is because we have rejected God and His Word. Mm-hmm. But we know from the Bible, too, that the root cause of all of our problem is the very sin nature that all of us are born with. And that the only way to definitively address that is by placing our faith in Jesus Christ and obeying His commands.
We're going to hear more about that on next week's program.
I think so, too, the Easter Sunday. So, Rita, that goes along also with the 2 weeks we've just spent here on Crossroads about the importance of obeying the Ten Commandments and the difference that will make in our lives. Along with that, since we're really into Scripture this morning, there's a verse in Proverbs chapter 4 that nails it because it warns us to guard our hearts with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And I think of a book called The Heart of the Problem is a Problem of the Heart. But there are certainly ways that we as a society, going back to your question about the violence and the school shootings, that we can hold back this tide of perversity and at least refuse to embrace or normalize what we know is wrong. And there's a continuum there that we have to guard against regarding our gradual acceptance of evil. First, we are expected to tolerate it. Then we are expected to see it as normal. We normalize it. And then we're demanded to actually help promote it.
Yeah.
That's the continuum.
And to call it good.
Yes. And we have to reach the point where enough is enough.
Mm-hmm.
So there's also, oh, this is kind of funny.
I want you to talk about the fence or the ambulance, Dean.
Well, there's an interesting example of how we get used to what is normal and we forget that we can do better. And it's a poem called, as you say, A Fence or an Ambulance. It describes a small village set on the edge of a steep cliff. Now, there's a problem because many people were getting too close, slipping over the edge, and falling to the floor of the valley below, often getting seriously hurt. So the folks had a debate. What shall we do to help solve this problem? Well, they had to choose. Shall we build a fence? There were some in the community thought that would be a good idea to prevent people from falling over. Or why don't we just put an ambulance at the bottom to collect the bodies when they fell over? And so there was this debate. An old man, an old sage, maybe a man or a woman, finally spoke up because day after day, people were still falling over the edge and getting hurt. So this old sage said, well, maybe we should build a fence. Oh, no, it's working just fine the way it is with the ambulance. Now, here I'm going to start reading the last couple stanzas of this poem.
Yeah.
There were a sensible few, and who were practical, too. They would not bear with such nonsense any longer. They believe that prevention is better than cure. And their, now we're talking politics here, and their party will soon be the stronger. So encourage them with your purse, with your voice and your pen, and while other do-gooders dally, they will scorn all of this pretense and put up a stout fence on the cliff that hangs over the valley. And here was their thought. The last stanza says this: "It is better to guide well the young than to reclaim them when they are old. For the voice of true wisdom is calling. To rescue the fallen is good, but 'tis best to prevent other people from falling. Therefore," and this is the conclusion, "better close up the source of temptation and crime than to deliver from dungeon or galley. Better to put up a strong fence round the top of the cliff than an ambulance down in the valley."
Dean, thank you for sharing. I asked Dean to share that poem with you because I love it. I just think it's such a great example of the issue we face today.
We talked about that in our Valley Family Forum capstone classes.
That's where I heard it.
Because we need to take preventive action instead of waiting till the crime is done and then throw them in prison into the hospital.
Yeah, but now we need to point out that the placement of the fence is important in this, where you put the fence. You know, you can't put the fence halfway down the cliff, you know, and think it's going to do any good there. But we also need to point out that the law is only one type of fence. In some situations, it is appropriate to use the force of law to protect society from going into the pit. For instance, it is appropriate to seek laws that protect unborn babies from abortion because protecting life is one of the primary purposes of government. But in most cases, Dean, the law is not the only kind of fence available, and in many cases, it's not the best or the most effective. In many cases, the broader culture's just disapproval of certain behaviors or attitudes can be equally important and sometimes more effective. Also, just limitations that the family sets for their kids in love, healthy boundaries that it sets for them, can be the most effective and important by far in shaping those kids as future citizens and just, you know, future adults. And I think that this is all true when it comes to dealing with both gun violence and sexual harassment, which we're really focusing on today.
Rita, that reminds me, again, some of our listeners may remember a Surgeon General, I think during the administration of Ronald Reagan, Califano was his name. He waged war against tobacco and cigarette smoking. It was transformational.
Yes.
Instead of it being a sign of cool and popular, it became an anathema. What are you doing? You're hurting your body.
Yes.
And if we can do that with tobacco, we can do it with opioid and with pornography. I want us to come to that point. And you nailed it. It's the broader culture's disapproval that is important.
Right.
We have to have a transformation of our culture.
Yep.
Well, Rita, before we go any further, let's pause for a few minutes to review some statistics. Some people won't believe it if we don't attach numbers to it. So, first on the issue of entertainment as it relates to violence, I'd like us to consider a couple of facts from a recent paper published by the American Association of Family Physicians. Here's the first one. And it's about entertainment media, which we're talking about. Children and adolescents in the United States spend an average of 7.5 hours per day using various forms of entertainment media. That includes television, video games, internet, and recorded media.
Wow, that's the hours to be a full-time job. That's a lot of time.
They should get paid for this, an eight-hour day. Okay, a second number. And this goes back really to just watching television. Studies have shown that by the time young people living today reach their 70s, and I can identify with that, they will have spent the equivalent of 7 to 10 years of their lives watching television. Boy, would I love to have those years.
What could you do in 7 to 10 years?
A lot of good things.
Yeah.
Well, now here's a third number, and this talks about violence, which you've addressed with school shootings. Nearly all American teens, up to 97% of them, play video games. That's what those little thumbs are doing, I guess, all the time.
Yep.
The average amount of weekly playing time on video games is 13 hours.
Oh, my.
13 hours. That's almost 2 hours a day just playing video games. All right. That's the fourth one. Now let's go on. Here's a fifth one. It's not a number, but it's a conclusion. Studies have shown a significant association between violent contact with increases in aggression, desensitization to violence, and a decrease in positive social behaviors. There's a correlation there. Well, duh. That shouldn't surprise anybody. Several studies have also shown that consumers of rap music are more likely to accept the use of violence, to accept violence against women, and to commit violent or aggressive acts themselves. Now, if anybody wants proof, it's there.
Yep. Now, just to bring this home, make it really practical, let's look at one piece of anecdotal evidence. I'm sure all of our listeners remember all too well the tragedy of the Sandy Hook shooting, where Adam Lanza murdered 20 children and 6 adults. Did you know, Dean, that investigators found a cache of violent video games in his home, including popular titles Call of Duty, Grand Theft Auto, as well as Left 4 Dead, Dead Rising, and Vice City. But here is the really disturbing one, Dean. These investigators also discovered that this man had been playing a computer game called School Shooting. That's the name of the game, in which the player controls a character who enters a school and shoots students.
That is incredible.
And yet, all the outrage we hear is about guns. Now, I just want to be clear. The Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms is not an unlimited right, just as the right to free speech has its limitations. The Second Amendment doesn't preclude society from prohibiting the sale of assault weapons to the mentally ill or to the criminally violent, just as the First Amendment does not preclude us from forbidding slander and libel. But the point, Dean, is this. This debate over gun control seems to be really the only debate about this whole issue of preventing school shootings. And it shouldn't be. This should not be the only front on which the battle to protect our children is waged. And frankly, it shouldn't even be the primary front on which it is waged.
I think you've said somewhere it's like putting a Band-Aid over cancer.
Exactly.
It is just superficial and it doesn't get to the heart
of the
problem.
Too late.
Someone prepared to murder children will have no qualms about procuring a gun illegally. But if we could decrease the propensity for bloodshed in our young men, what a different society we could be. And I will add, that includes having people read and obey the Ten Commandments, as we discussed last week.
And as we all know, guns do have legitimate purposes. So why is it that all the outrage is over guns, while we hear very little outrage, if any, over these games that invite adolescents whose brains are not even yet fully developed to pretend to go into a school and shoot students? When our boys and young men amuse themselves by soaking in violence, cruelty, and murder from television, movies, and online videos, all available now on personal handheld devices, when they then begin to participate in such acts for hours on end via ever more realistic and addictive video games, no one should be surprised when they gravitate toward real-life violence.
Rita, I just thought of this. Arcades in the shopping malls also feed this propensity to violence. Well, Rita, I also noticed that following the shooting in Florida, which, by the way, I understand that shooter was also obsessed with violent video games.
And, no but, surprise.
Yeah. So there's a pattern here that we need to recognize. And I understand that President Trump did invite video game executives to a meeting to discuss the effects of their products on the culture.
Mm-hmm. Well, haven't heard the results of that
yet. Will that have
yet,
any effect? Can you expect a business that makes such profits over these games to, by themselves, control their product. I'm skeptical about that, but looking forward to be surprised. But anyway, moving on to our other issue, Rita, let's talk about the effects of all the sexual content in popular entertainment today. And anyone who doesn't think it's having an effect on the behavior of young people has your head in the sand and had better think again.
Absolutely.
Now, once again, you've provided some research material here that I'll share with our listeners. For example, a RAND health survey conducted just several years ago found that teens who watch a lot of television with sexual content are more likely to initiate sexual intercourse in the following year if they wait that long. It also concluded that frequent exposure to TV sexual content was associated with a significantly greater likelihood of teen pregnancy in the 3 years following that exposure. And finally, it says that heavy exposure to sexually degrading lyrics predicts accelerated initiation of sexual activity. Again, it's duh.
Right.
That should not surprise anybody.
Yeah.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
Well, the key findings of this study have been replicated twice by researchers at other institutions, so this is not just some off-the-wall somebody's opinion.
It's not an outlier.
Right.
Well, again, it's just no surprise when pornography is accepted and normalized. A lot of what we see on commercials today would have been considered pornography 20 or 30 years ago. And now it's just mainstream television. When sex is the most prevalent theme in our music, books, magazines, television programs, and movies, it is no wonder that some men will seek to act out the ideas they have consumed, and women too. While the steady diet of sex in our media and entertainment does not excuse sexual harassment or abuse or make it any less wrong, it should make it less surprising. To me, it is just common sense that if sex and violence are the water we swim in as a people, we will see an abundance of sexual immorality and violence play out in the real world around us. And I know that everyone wants to see those scientific studies, so we've just cited some of those on the program. But isn't it just inevitable? And isn't it clear that the entertainment industry is a moral decay vector? It's the place where the disease is picked up. It's the carrier of the disease. And I just think we need to confront the vector, Dean.
I'm glad you use such nice words. I think it's a sewer. Let's call it what it is.
Okay. That's another word.
Well, Rita, you've touched on a sore spot there when you mentioned pornography. We've talked about it before because it's had a terrible effect on our society. It is not a victimless activity.
No.
It is addictive, it is progressive, and it is destructive. It leaves a trail of ruined men, exploited women, damaged children, disease, crime, and often violent death. You get me all revved up here, Rudy. So, Rita, let's not just talk about it. What are we going to do about it?
Yeah. Well, one thing is we should demand with our pocketbooks and with our voices that the entertainment industry change its ways. Public outcry has proven to be effective at instigating corporate change. Just look at Dick's Sporting Goods. After this most recent shooting, Dick's Sporting Goods announced that they were taking off their shelves certain assault weapons. So we know that public pressure is very effective when it comes to corporate America. And it's time for America to start directing more of our indignation toward the root causes of society's moral decay, not just toward the instruments, you know, the guns that demonstrate the depth of the infection. Dean, maybe you can give us an example of a time when you and I were involved in this sort of activity on corporate America, and it had an effect. Can you just remind
Rita,
us of that briefly?
I'm glad you asked that because that immediately came to mind.
Yeah.
You have always said we're not a chit-chat society.
Right. Don't have
time
for those.
And if that's all we're doing, you've got better things to do.
Well,
Rita, It does bring back the memory of a situation we faced some 15 years ago when we discovered that we had three SOBs in town. What'd you say an SOB is?
Sexually oriented businesses, of course.
Oh, okay, yes. That's an SOB, sexually oriented business. Well, we had three of them. We knew we had to do something. With the help of the entire community, we asked the members of the city council to enact a city ordinance that limited the time, manner, and place of these SOBs. There were three of them at the time. The ordinance passed, and now there are none. None of the SOBs in Harrisonburg. In addition, we asked a local convenience store to remove pornographic magazines from its shelf that were at eye level to 10-year-old boys and girls across from the candy bars. After some resistance, in fact, they denied that they were in this for profit. I said, are you in this for principle? Oh, how dare you even question it? Well, after some resistance, they too did as we asked. But it's an ongoing battle. It's not one victory and it's over.
Right.
It continues to be a challenge.
And it requires constant vigilance and then the courage to take action when we see these things. You know, I want to say something else to the parents. I think we have more responsibility than anyone else when we have children in our home, and grandparents when you have children in your home. We can take the phones away from our kids. Mm. We are their parents.
Yes.
We can turn the television off. We can not allow them to watch things that are feeding their minds garbage. And, you know, I want to tell you about a resource that I use that is really helpful to me, and it's pluggedin.com.
Hmm.
This is a resource provided by Focus on the Family, and it provides a full review on popular movies, television shows, books, and I believe games. Games aren't as big in my family, but I use this all the time. When my kids want to watch a movie or when my daughter wants to read, you know, the newest book series, I go to pluggedin.com and they give you a description of the plot. They tell you about any violent content that's in it. They tell you about any sexual content that's in it. And then I can make an informed and wise decision as a mom about whether this is what I want to be fed to my child's brain and to their spirit. Is this the kind of thing I want my kids to consume or not?
What is the resource again?
It's pluggedin.com.
Wow.
Yes.
Sounds great.
It is great. Thanks again to our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel Services, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren in Harrisonburg. Thank you all for listening and also for your encouragement and financial support. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, 22803. If you would like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. I'm Rita Peters with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Rejoice, 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 rej